Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00044. Recorded on May 4, 2023. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. Chapter 44. Berserkowitz. Berserkowitz. Chapter 44.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
I went ahead and took the entire week off, a staycation as it's called, really to get myself recentered. I'm a little off kilter. I've been a little off kilter lately, maybe longer than I realize. I don't know. Ain't been quite my 100% self, and I'm aiming to remedy that. And the big part of process was just stepping away from my workaday Joe piece of shit fucking job, right? Just get away from that, decouple from that, and get on with some of the things that I've got to catch up with. I've got domestic issues and challenges. I've got hobbies. I've got relationships to attend to that I just can't get to all the things going on. I am absolutely blessed with an abundance of all kinds of stuff, but in that are problems that need to be dealt with, and those problems that need to be dealt with continue to mount to the point where I can't just really kick back and relax and enjoy life. I mean, at this age, I take the week off because it's my birthday, right? My birthday week, and at this age, I probably should be settling down a little bit. You know, but because of the rambunctious lifestyle I've had, the Rolling Stone lifestyle that I've led up until the past couple of years, I got a little bit of catching up to do, you might say, right? I got to pay the piper, you know, pay the piper. So I got work to do. I got work to do. So anyway, that's part of my little status update. But what's been going on? My work has been inside and outside. Again, a lot of domestic stuff. Landscaping, I've mentioned it before. And just doing landscape maintenance things, like, you know, what's left of the lawn, really. The weeds that are growing everywhere. I have to knock them down every so often. So there's that. But, you know, I put up the white picket fence, which I spoke about. I'm doing more planning. Yeah, I've worked a lot. I've worked hard this week. In spite of it being off time, but I've had a lot of hours to put in doing some of this shit. I am on my schedule. Even though I'm trying not to be on a schedule, that's a big part of all this too. Just, right, decouple from the job, decouple from schedules. It just seemed like, you know, Monday, Tuesday, the first 2 days of the week that I took off, I still had some shit that I had to attend to. You know, after that, Wednesday, Thursday, I don't really have anything that I have to attend to. It's just things that I wake up and I do what I want to do. Even if that's just laying down and doing nothing. But that hasn't worked for me. I lay down and I'm right back up in 2 minutes. I'm wound up to get this shit done, you know. And it's not going to be done. I just got to knock away at it. Anyway. So outside work is there. Inside work, though, and this is probably more pertinent to my dwindling listening audience, right? I have made the decision to move away from the ambition of 2 episodes a week down to 1, really cutting that in half. And really streamlining the productivity in the meantime. Trying to keep these episodes on course for an hour or so. And, you know, trying to, like, get it in one recording session that doesn't require editing. You know, everything I can do to make this go quick. Because I am trying to get into video casting as well, right? Audio podcasts, that's good. That's cool. They're easy. It's quick to get up there. The file sizes and shit like that much smaller, easier to deal with. And but on the other hand, I want to do some video stuff too, and I've got the tools and everything necessary to do that. I've been working that out. I started hacking around with software I wasn't familiar with that kind of brings all the elements of a video podcast together. It's called OBS Studio, and I'm using it on my Linux box, my Ubuntu machine. And, you know, it's kind of cool. And on the other hand, it's kind of iffy. I'm wrestling with it, but it seems like I'm getting things done. But I've had to sink a lot of hours into it to really familiarize myself with its capabilities. And to this point in a week, this is Thursday, you know, it's day, what the hell is it, 6 of a 9-day hiatus. It's gone quick, I gotta tell you. This is just, of course, you know. You know, 6 days have gone by faster outside of work than 1 day inside of work goes. And I mean that in a psychological way. But yeah, this is what I'm doing. All right. So I'm cutting down my audio podcast productivity in half, and I'm sinking the time into establishing a video podcast presence and really aiming to take it to the streets. I really am. I really think I might be able to, you know, if I get my shit together and I get myself centered, spiritually sound all over again, running back on all cylinders at full strength, I may have something to offer this shitty world after all. My expectations are not high. They've been low. I've been doing with the audio podcast so far, really just out of interest and I think it's a good leave behind for people that care about me, especially my wife, my mother, you know, these people in my life, probably my biggest fans, probably always will be like that, you know, wife and mom. And that's a good thing, you know, if your mother loves you and your wife loves you, you can't be all that bad, right? Can't be all that bad. So that's kind of where things are at with me. And I've got the day's work done now, and I'm going to try to chunk out an hour-long episode here. And it is May the 4th of the year 2023, right? May the 4th. So it is May the 4th be with you day, right? The Star Wars reference. May the 4th be with you. All right, so I say that to all of the minions of my listening audience out there. May the 4th be with you. Now, of course, you know me, you know I am more Star Trek than Star Wars. I believe that Star Trek is greater than Star Wars. Always has been, always will be, and I'm not even going to argue the points of it. But you know that's where I come from. But nonetheless, I know just enough about Star Wars to understand the whole May the 4th reference. But, you know, this is not the only 4 I'm really concerned with at this point in time, but it is significant. It is May the 4th. That's 5-4, right? 5-4. But this is also Chapter 44 of the Post Arlen Monologics series, the overall 44th chapter. So I think I'm going to kind of hone in on that number 4, especially the number 44, right? So I've mentioned the 5-4, like me, you know, May 4th, so it's the 54. We go from the 54 to the 44, right? And you know, I think I got this fucking problem in my head. I may have mentioned it before, but I've got like years of useless information stored up in me. If you can recall the old sitcom reference of Cheers, right? The Boston Tavern with Sam Malone and Norm and Cliff Clavin, right? The mailman guy. He was just that walking book of useless fucking knowledge, right? He knew shit that didn't matter, that people didn't care, that nobody would know. And I kind of got that about me. And what I've got in mind here specifically is sports data, right? Sports information, sports history. Like, I see numbers and I still, you know, still go back to my youth, as you might say, depending on your linguistics, right? My youth, going back to when I was 10 years old, right? So what's that? I see 54, I see 44. What do I see? I see New York Yankees, right? I was a big, huge baseball fan, a huge Yankees fan. And my whole life was heading to, like, playing third base for the New York Yankees. That's what my goal in life was, you know. And I had the means in every way except psychologically, which I was flawed, and I ended up on drugs and blew the whole proposition out of the water. But anyway, I was a humongous Yankees fan, right? And I think back to those days of my time. Yankees were winning, they were in a World Series like 3 years in a row, and like 4 years out of five, and just, you know, they were a little dynasty, you know, at that time, a little, you know, for like half a decade. And on that team, right, this is what I say, the numbers, 54, 5-4, as in, you know, May the 4th. 5-4 was Goose Gossage, the big relief pitcher, right? The closer, right? The big menacing guy with the big fucking mustache. And he was 54. And then 44 was, of course, Reggie Jackson, right? The big home run hitter, you know, the all or nothing guy. Take that big swing. If he hit it, it was out of here. But he usually missed it. So he struck out all the fucking time, right? But no, he was... That's a little extreme. I mean, he hit in the 280s generally. He's a pretty good and very famous ball player, and he was big in the clutch moments, right? How do I know all this? I don't know. I experienced it at the time. But what I'm saying is useless fucking sports data. It means nothing to me right now. Probably will never mean nothing again. It may come up handy in idle, you know, small talk conversations with people, but... it's useless. In fact, you know, my cup runneth over. I need more room in my fucking brain for better data than that. I would love to be able to just, like, defrag myself and take that fucking block and just chunk it, you know, and like leave the room open for like spiritual pursuits, something theological, or the how-to of everything, right? I was always a why person. My father taught me when I was a kid, you know, whatever you consider, always ask why. Why? Why are you doing this? Why are they doing that, right? He taught me why. He taught my brother how. So my brother, who knew the how, he ended up being very mechanical, and I ended up being very kind of cerebral, like always contemplating shit, a little slow to just get my hands dirty and get on with it, right? Because I'm always questioning everything. And I think my brother probably got the better end of the deal, but it is what it is, right? I was a why guy, he's a how guy, and, you know, working together we would do well, but unfortunately we are half a country apart, and that's that. It's a useless sports day, but I talk about that, like, you know, I'm talking about the New York Yankees, and it would be like the year 1977, right? So you got 1977, New York City, and that is, of course, the Summer of Sam, right? There was a movie called The Summer of Sam. It's talking about the summer 1997, right? It was a movie. I forget when it came out. I saw it. Pretty good. Worth watching. I may dig it up again now that I have it in mind. But, of course, The Summer of Sam is a reference to the Son of Sam. Son of Sam was the serial killer, whose name is David Berkowitz, who apparently has come a long way in his life. He turned into a jailhouse preacher, right? He came to faith along the way, and, you know, that's for real. I've actually seen, I don't know, a documentary or interview or some shit involving him, and I think it's for real. I think it's authentic. I don't think he's looking for a way out of jail and pretending to be a Christian, you know, taking the Lord's name in vain sort of thing. It seems like he's come to you know, to faith, and that's a really good thing. It, you know, it doesn't bring back, it doesn't change what he did, but the only way to advance anything out of what he did was to come to this faith. So good for him, I gotta say. You know, faith is a good thing. It doesn't matter what you did in this world. There's no sin that's too great. You gotta understand that. Many of us contemplate faith in Jesus Christ and feel that we are completely unworthy. You know, when we're really down and dirty with the fact of our sin, the fact of our wrong, yeah, we feel really unworthy. And that unworthiness is really a trick of the devil, even a trick of ourselves. Our own autonomy dictates that we somehow try to cling to our autonomy and not yield to a power greater than ourselves, right? So anyway, all that. I don't want to go off on that tangent at the moment, but it's the son of Sam, David Berkowitz, and 1977 New York City, Summer of Sam movie, and it's all about, excuse me, I'm honking and shit, got a dry spot in my throat, let me get a slug of coffee here, maybe that'll work away, or maybe my freaking strep throat is still lingering, kind of hard to tell, it's been a month now. Anyway, so yeah, the son of Sam. Now, he is known as the .44 caliber killer, right? As well as the son of Sam. Now, he didn't kill everybody he killed. It was 13 murders, I think he was responsible for that summer. And but at least a couple of them, like the first, were actually the murders committed with a hunting knife, see? So it's not all about guns. Killers will find a way to kill, all right? Killers will find a way to kill. And I guess maybe he got his shirt bloodied up or something with that fucking hunting knife. I don't know exactly what kind of hunting knife. I should look it up, see if I could find it. But as of right now, I don't know what kind of knife it was. I'm a knife guy, so these things kind of amuse me. Right? But he graduated kind of quickly to a .44 Special revolver. Right? .44 Special. .44 Special is a caliber. It's a large bore caliber. And I'll get into that a little bit, but what he was using back in the day was a Charter Arms, right? Company, I believe a Connecticut company, right? There are a lot of, like I said, a lot of firearms companies have been centered, headquartered out of Connecticut. We know that Smith & Wesson, who I'll mention in a moment, is moving their operations down to Merville, Tennessee, where I used to live. I mention that all the time because I wish I was there. I wish I was there. I love Texas. My time in Tennessee was good. I had a good situation. Merville's a great place, magical place. Smoky Mountains, magical fucking area in this country. And now you're going to have a little boost to the economy, and I would have been in at the right time, at the right price, to enjoy the fruits of that out in the country as it was. But nope, things didn't work out, and here I am. But a good thing is I'm here. And I met the most significant person in my life, my wife, of course. So, you know, we managed to find each other. That's the benefit. And you don't know what's going to happen from here on out. Anyway, Charter Arms, right? Charter Arms, a firearm manufacturer out of Connecticut in the early 70s, 72 or 73, they came out with what they called the Charter Arms Bulldog 44 Special. And that was the weapon of choice for the son of Sam, David Berkowitz, right? The .44 caliber killer. His .44 caliber was a special, and I say it that way because more commonly we think of .44, we think of .44 Magnum, and we'll get into that in a moment. But while we're still on the idea of charter arms, it just so happens in this tiny household, we own a charter arms firearm. Now, it's not a Bulldog 44. It's actually a Pit Bull 45 ACP, right? Which is unusual for a revolver. Charter Arms has a patent. See, the 45 ACP. ACP means automatic Colt pistol. It's meant for an automatic. The way it cycles rounds and everything, it's a magazine-driven thing. It doesn't have any kind of rim for the revolver cylinder to catch. It generally doesn't work in a revolver unless you put on these special clips, which, of course, is a pain in the ass. Put a good clip on a bullet just to use it in a revolver. You know, it's a bullet not meant for a revolver, but we have from Charter Arms a 45 ACP revolver that doesn't require those clips. It has a special little tension mechanism that grabs the backside of these rounds and holds them in place. Little bit of a pain in the ass to load, little bit, but I think you get used to it in time if that becomes your everyday weapon of choice, right? And so we got a Charter Arms Pit Bull 45. When I first discovered it online, I thought it was kind of an amusing notion. I have a couple of other 45s as it is. I got ammo out the wazoo for it. So it's like you could buy a revolver and just have everything. I actually bought it as a gift for my wife, right? The Pit Bull 45. And it's a Pit Bull, like my Pit Bull Henry, right? All that. Anyway, yeah, I say in 44, you think of 44, you think of 44 Magnum, of course. David Berkowitz was doing his killings with a 44 Special. They're different, but they're really not much different. 44 Special, 44 Mag, actual comparison between the two. It's the same bullet, so you're going to have the same bullet weight, of course. What's different is the case length, right? The Magnum, and this is generally the case for a Magnum, it's going to be a slightly longer case length, and that does two things. A, you get a greater charge, right? A 44 Magnum will be able to contain by volume 4.5 additional grains of powder, and that's actually very significant in a handgun round, right? And that's, of course, going to Never mind. What I wanted to get back on the case length, right? The case length, the 44 mag is in the area of about an eighth of an inch longer, right? That's your brass. That's not the bullet itself, but the brass that holds the bullet is an eighth of an inch longer, and that extra volume brings you between 4 and 5 extra grains of gunpowder, and this is where the difference shows up. You show up, I take a 44. We have a couple of 44s in the house, right? We got, and I'll talk about some of these things, but we got a couple, and I take either or both or whatever, the old and/or, right? And or, down to the gun range, and you know, everybody's popping off, rifles down the other end, and the pistols are all here in the same area, and everybody's shooting 9mm and 40s and 45s. There might be a father teaching a kid on a 22. So pop, 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 right? So you just hear all this gunfire going off, and then the guy comes out with the 44 mag, and he pulls the trigger, and goes, kaboom! Boom, right? And like everybody stops shooting and they all look in the direction of the sound. I love it. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing. You know, the sense of power, people who are not so acclimated to shooting glean from pulling the trigger on a handgun or any kind of firearm. It's certainly compounded exponentially when you pull the trigger on a 44, right? You feel it. It's a kick. It's a man's gun. Very difficult for most people to one hand. It's a two-hand job, generally speaking. And a big guy like me and bigger than me, you can one hand it. It's not going to kill you. But, before it breaks you, it's going to fly out of your hand. You got to be able to hold it without letting it loose. You know, you got to know the potential. You got to know the power of those things before you pull the trigger, anticipating it correctly without over anticipating it and, you know, pulling your aim off sight, as so many people have a tendency to do. So you get the 44 Special versus the 44 Mag. All right, there's your significant difference, and the only one really. You know, case length, which adds to extra powder, which adds to bigger boom, higher velocity, and you end up with the a greater knockdown power, which is not necessarily scientifically quantifiable, but theoretic. But I believe it. I believe it. You're going to take a slug that big, and it's big. It's a big chunk of lead that comes out in a 44. Make no mistake about it. When you're talking about dot 44, you're talking about standard weights and measurements, and the measurement would be 0.44 of an inch in diameter. So you're getting about a half an inch around, right? Which, you know, do the math. You got a 22 caliber. It's literally half the fucking size in radius, right? And circumference. Diameter is probably the best word to use for it. Maybe try them all. One of them will fit. It's a big chunk of lead, but it happens to also be very long in length, right? Now, 45 ACP, for example, I mentioned that with the Charter Arms Pitbull model. It's 45, so it's got that little 1/100th of an inch diameter, greater in size than the 44, but it might be half the length, and it might be, you know, so, well, significantly lighter than a 44. So 44 is a big fucking round. There are bigger. You can get 50 calibers and things like that and increments on the way up to that. But it's a common use, easily found, easily accessible caliber and firearm, right? I'll give you some for instances here, right? There's a variety of 44 Magnum revolvers to choose from. I'm not going to mention all of them. I'm going to mention some that I know about off the top of my head right quick. Clint Eastwood, his Dirty Harry Callahan character, was famous for that big old fucking gun that he wore slung off of his shoulder, right? He had the shoulder harness holster, the shoulder holster harness or whatever. Shoulder holster, as you call it, shoulder holster, and he would pull that thing out, and he'd say, "Make my day," and a big old fucking gun, right, long as a Cadillac, and that particular make and model is a Smith & Wesson, right, I mentioned Smith & Wesson moving to Murrillville, Tennessee, Smith & Wesson Model 29, right, the Model 29, that's the Dirty Harry Magnum 44 that everybody wants, and you can get it. They still make them, right? $1,300 and you're in. That's not cheap. It's not cheap weapon. Six-shot revolver, you know, if you're more of a top-shelf kind of shooter, it's for you, right? I do not spend that much money on firearms. Not one, anyway. For that much, I would rather get two or three of a variety and take my chances because I'm not walking around shooting people all day. No, I'm just not. You know, they're a tool, and there's a time for them, and then there's time to practice it. And when I practice, I don't piss away ammo like crazy. I do enough to get myself aligned and familiar, and you know, and that's that. It's not fun and games at the range for me. I don't just go for the bang and the boom. It's work. I go to the gun range. It's work. I'm sighting in optics. Acclimating or reacclimating myself to firearms that have been either brand new or been sitting around in the gun safe for a while. It's all work. And anyway, so Smith & Wesson Model 29 is the world famous, pop culturally famous Clint Eastwood / Dirty Harry 44 Magnum revolver. Also of note, a little less expensive, and we have one of these. We have one of these, a Ruger Super Blackhawk, right? And this one is like two Cadillacs long. We've got a Hunter version of it. I think the barrel is like 10 inches or some shit like that. It's either 7 or 10. I forget. There's a big difference between the two. It's long, though. It's long. It's specifically for hunting. See, when you get an extended barrel length, you're going to get your velocity is going to retain its trajectory of downrange quite a bit longer, right? Quite a bit more. You got the Ruger Super Blackhawk 44 Magnum. Those go for $1,000, and you still get them. Ruger's great company, right? Ruger, if you don't know, great company. Again, American company. North Carolina is where their production is, unless they've moved since whenever. But I'm a big fan of Ruger. I like Ruger stuff in general. They are not bottom shelf, but not top shelf, but somewhere in the mid-range, maybe upper mid-range in terms of price, but their quality is top shelf. They're really good weapons and interesting engineering. Ruger is a company that really thinks about the products that they do. They find small ways to improve upon things, and really great stuff. So the Ruger Super Blackhawk 44, and now the bottom shelf, right? This is me, but on bottom shelf everything. That's the life and times of the Dwayne Schneider of Post Arlen, Texas, right? You know, it's gonna bottom shelf lifestyle all the way. But I have one of these, a Taurus Tracker 44, for half the price of the Ruger or so. It's in the $525 range around now. That's pretty much exactly half the price of a Super Blackhawk. A lot more affordable, and it gets you into a 44 mag, and it works. It works. I actually have a 357 version of it as well. They're good, solid guns. I don't know over time if you do heavy charges on top of your Magnum and just go to the range and shoot 5,000 rounds. Will the Taurus Tracker hold up? I can't say, but again, I'm not the kind of person to do that. The amount of times I'm going to be shooting that thing, I am absolutely certain it's going to work. You know, I love the gun. I do. I really do. For an inexpensive firearm like that, comparably inexpensive, okay? You can do worse. You can go to other companies other than Taurus, or lesser companies who actually have very shitty products. But Taurus is not shitty. They're effective. They're not going to be the quality of a Smith & Wesson or a Ruger, but for your normal household use and personal defense and minimal time at the range practicing, you do well with them, right? So for about 5.25, you get yourself into the Taurus Tracker 44 mag. Again, these 44s, they're revolvers, right? And if you don't know, there's two kinds of handguns, generally speaking. Well, you could probably technically go in more. You got those Dillinger types and shit like that. But basically, generally speaking, you've got revolvers versus automatics, right? Those are the two big daddies. Those are the two most popular, most useful guns. Now, they all go back in time. The revolver is a little bit more traditional than the automatic, but the automatics, they go back too. Think of 1911, right? The 1911, that's a model, a year. It's all that stuff. So they're not exactly new either, these automatics, but the revolvers go back a little ways before that. Think the old Colt 45s, Civil War era. I got a buddy who's big into those, and he's always trying to convince me that I need one, and I believe him, but I could just never break down and get my own when push comes to shove. It's not a need thing, it's a want thing, and for the money involved with something like that, there's a lot of other things that I really need to accomplish at this time. Regrettably, someday I'll do that. The Colt 45, great weapons, absolutely great weapons. That's a different kind of 45. That's a 45 long Colt is what they're called, different than the automatic Colt pistol round. Bigger, chunkier, longer case, more powder, all that stuff, good stuff. So you've got revolvers and automatics. And what I'm trying to do here is kind of break down a little comparison, give you the advantages and disadvantages between the two. Starting with revolvers. The advantage of a revolver, one advantage of a revolver over a pistol, right? That's what you call an automatic, a pistol, is reliability, right? There's no real mechanical parts involved with, or very little a mechanism involved with a revolver as compared to what's going, all the stuff that's going on inside of an automatic. With the revolver, you got a cylinder that's just got to click once over, and if it don't go for some reason, something broke, you could just spin it by hand, you know. But it's going to work for you. It's going to work. Whereas with the automatic, you're cycling out of a magazine with spring tension, and everything has got to go just right. And if it doesn't, you're going to get jammed up. So you don't get jammed up with a revolver, but you can get jammed up and frequently do. You know, depending on your dependencies, it happens. It happens at the range. I'm a reloader, right? So that's a little hobby of mine. So when you're testing rounds out, if for some reason your charge is a little on the light side, it's not going to cycle properly. It's going to get jammed in there. That won't happen with a revolver. It'll bust off your powder, and if the charge doesn't get it out the barrel, then it'll stick in the barrel. But it's going to shoot, and it's going to cycle, right? The rest is up to you. It should theoretically go out the end of the barrel without getting stuck, but, and I've not seen it happen in a revolver, it should just go drop out the other end, but there's a little swelling involved with the charge, especially with a Magnum. So anyway, reliability, all right? Reliability goes to the revolver over the pistol. Aiming, right? Aiming. See, revolver, anybody can grab, get the back sight lined up with the front sight, just naturally, and just point at your target and pull a trigger and hit it. As long as you're steady, you're going to hit it. With a pistol, it's really a two-hand gun. You're supposed to grip it in a very particular way with very particular pressure to keep everything lined up right. So you have to become very practiced at that to where it's a natural attainment, right? From holster to hands, you have two hands on it, pressure all balanced and proper, squeeze the trigger, hit your target. It's more work. Like I said, anybody can grab a revolver. Little kids, you know, I got a little 38, I have a couple of like 22s for training, right? For training purposes, for training children in my life. I don't have any right now, but when I did, right? You get them these smaller caliber guns that don't have a big kick on them, and you could watch them. They'll grab it, and they'll shoot it, and they'll hit the bullseye, and they'll be all happy and excited. Then you hand them a pistol, and then they're kind of all over the map. There's a reason for it, right? There's a reason for it. So quick to aim, right? The revolver is more reliable, quicker to find your target, hit your target, and then the strength overall, especially with these Magnum calibers. It requires structure. Your metal has to be sound. The design of it has to be sound to take the explosiveness involved with these large caliber and Magnum charges. Now, the disadvantages or the round capacity, right? You're doing well with a revolver if you could squeeze seven rounds out of it. There are like 357s, smaller calibers, and 22s. You might get like eight, I think. There may be more than that. 22s, but 20, you got to hit somebody like five times with a 22 to piss them off. With a 357, it's a decent round, but it's small, and you can get seven round capacity from certain manufacturers on your cylinder, but typically you're going to get five. You can get five, you can get six, you can get seven. Typically, you're going to get five rounds out of it. And the more rounds in the cylinder, the more you pay. The more rounds in the cylinder, the bigger the cylinder is. And then here comes another thing, the profile, right? Automatic, your pistols have a better profile. They don't have anything jagged sticking out the sides like a revolver. Most traditional revolvers have the hammer that you pull back. Some are hammerless now. And it's not exactly a new thing, but if you've got an actual hammer, it's going to get hung up on shit. It's in the way. Like I was talking about the cylinder itself, the more rounds you jam in it, the bigger the cylinder gets around, the more it protrudes out the sides, right? So it's more of your revolver tends to be more of a jagged-shaped tool, whereas the pistols are very linear and not so jagged generally. That's another advantage for the pistol. Of course, you're reloading, right? Well, I was going to say the round capacity is very limited in the cylinders of a revolver, where on the other hand, depending on the caliber that you're using, even like a 45 diameter, 45 ACP, I've got a 45, that's 13 plus 1, that's 14 rounds, 13 in a magazine. It's a big gun, you know. That's a lot of fucking firepower waiting to happen just in one place. Compare that to the 45 long Colt revolver I mentioned earlier, where that's your basic old cowboy six shooter, right? You get six rounds and ain't no chamber to put one in, right? You get six and that's it. And for safety reasons, it's recommended that you pull one of those, you know, that you don't have the hammer potentially coming down on the back side of the bullet. You're popping it off by accident, right? So you could be six, but you'd be safe with five, and there you go. You got these limitations. You know, you got to make your shots count, which is a good thing. A good shooter only needs one, right? Unless you're ganged up on, and that's where the problem comes in. That's where the problem. If you're going to get in a shootout and there's multiple people involved, you want as many bullets in that gun as you can do. This is where the automatic, the pistols come in real handy. You could get upwards of 20 plus 1 in 9 millimeter size on certain firearms. And that compares down to your 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 on the revolver. It's a big difference. And then while you're in the neighborhood about your round capacity, the reloading is a lot easier. You preload, or really for both. I was going to say you preload your magazines in a pistol. It's a magazine-fed device. And all you got to do is when you're home at night, you just fill it up, right? You grab three or four magazines, fill them all up to the top, and then you carry those in your pocket. And as you empty one out, you just pop another one in. And that's a quick reload. There is a quicker type of reload for a revolver, which is typically just one bullet at a time. You got to spin the cylinder, put a bullet in, spin the cylinder, put a bullet in, spin the cylinder, and do it like that. They have a quick loader, which ain't really all that quick, and it's a real pain in the ass to carry around. It's basically a cylinder in size that has a bullet for every hole in the cylinder, for every slot, ready to go. And you stick it all in at once and push a button, and it should decouple and load you all up in one shot. Not bad, but it's not. They're definitely not as quick as a magazine fed, so the advantage goes to the pistol in that regard. The weight, right? The weight. When you have a revolver, that is fucking steel. From top to bottom, it's heavy. The pistols are probably more than half plastic. Call it half. It's 50-50. It's half plastic and it's half steel. much lighter in weight. So along with the advantage that the pistol has with your profile and concealment, right? It's also lighter to carry around. And I know this, like when I have a 44 revolver loaded up and ready to go, I don't carry it on my hip. I could, but it's a lot better for something of that weight to hang on a shoulder harness and then balance it out on the other side with something like another gun or a bunch of ammo, right? I'm not saying revolvers can't be carried on the hip. I'm saying when you got one on the hip, you got an imbalance on you. They're heavy, right? Those big old Colt 45s and these big old 44 mags, big guns. You got a 38, that's nothing, right? 38, you fit in your pocket. But anyway, that's a whole different conversation. As far as concealment goes, if you're small enough with a revolver and you're going down to a 38, 32, 22, those are concealed carry stuff. It's not really an issue. But for self-defense, you typically want to bump it up. 38's a small round, but you put a little charge in it. It's the same thing as a 357. So you get your 357, you get that extra charge. It's going to help you. It's still a small round. And you get up into the 40s and everything, they're significantly bigger. Is there one advantage over another? Not really. It's general usefulness in whatever your situation may be and what your preferences are. Carry one of each as far as I'm concerned. Right? I'm not playing favorites here. I've got all kinds of both of them, and I'm happy with everything, you know. Firearms are tools. Tools of the trade. It depends on what your trade is, what your purpose is, and the efficacy of either type. Is valid in your given circumstance, either way. So, automatics versus revolvers. Continuing with the revolver, well, you know what comes to mind when I think of revolver? The Beatles, right? The Beatles made an album, Revolver, LP. But that's a hard pass. I don't like the Beatles. I just know more about them. It's like baseball. I got that useless information. It's shit that I don't really need to know. Shit I wish I didn't know so I had more mental capacity for other more significant things. So we'll just move along from the Beatles. But in a music trajectory that I suddenly moved on to, there is a band, or was a band, called Velvet Revolver, right? Velvet Revolver. That was some kind of amalgamation of Guns N' Roses and Stone Temple Pilots and whoever the other guys were. I forget. I was never really a big fan. I bought the first LP that they made, and there was only one song I really liked, and it seems to be the case for most people. I was never a big fan of Slash's guitar style, right? The Guns N' Roses guitar player, that Guns N' Roses sound, I find it kind of grating and annoying. And I don't even know how to describe it. And I'm not saying the guy's a bad player or anything like that. It's certainly better than me. Something about that sound, that bouncy, it's almost like a carnival-esque sounding lead guitar. It annoys me. I'm never a fan of it. Now, there's the one song on the Velvet Revolver. Well, let's just say one song by Velvet Revolver, period, that I really liked. And it's one that's pretty popular for everybody. Fall to Pieces is the name of it, right? Not Patsy Cline or anything like that. It's a whole different song. Actually, the Patsy Cline song is better. But here you go. But this is a really good song. And, of course, Scott Weiland, he's a singer from the Stone Temple Pilots. You're never going to find a greater singer for rock and roll than Scott Weiland was, but he's dead, and he was an idiot. And I shouldn't even say that, because like I already spoke earlier, how I fucked up my life, my opportunities, my chance, my gift. He did it in the same way, except, of course, he at least waddled and ambled his way into a taste of the fame and the good life about it, you know. He waited until he was a person of notoriety before he fucked everything else up. I fucked myself up before I was a notable individual. But I'm no one to say. Really, I'm really disappointed, because a voice that great, a creative mind that interesting. It's just a disappointment. And I know that his band members, Stone Temple Pilots is a great band. A couple of those guys from Jersey, like I'm from Jersey, right? The brothers, the DeLeo brothers, both Jersey guys, both excellent musicians. I think the bass player, the younger of the two, Robert DeLeo, real interesting character. I've seen some interviews involving him, and really intelligent, squared away, sober-minded individual, just loves music and knows all kinds of stuff about music, and you wouldn't expect that from somebody from the grunge era, right? One of those grunge bands. Interesting dude, but that's a little off to the side. See, I was disappointed in Scott Weiland for how he destroyed the possibility, how it was just maligned the Stone Temple Pilots. They just couldn't do shit. They couldn't make an album. They couldn't go on tour. Because Scott Weiland this and Scott Weiland that, it was always a fucking problem. I had the fortune of seeing them eventually while he was still alive, and he was actually not off the deep end, and it was a really good show down here in the DFW, the Verizon Arena, whatever the fuck they call it out there. Where is that? I want to say Grapevine, but I know that's wrong. It's just somewhere west of Dallas down there, one of them towns. Not quite out to Arlington. Shit, I can't even think of the name of it. It ain't Grapevine. I always forget the name of this town, too. Well, anyway, it's out there somewhere. A Fall to Pieces, a really, really good song, but wrecked by that guitar sound that I don't like, you know? And it ruins it for me. Really nice song otherwise. And I saw a video on it, right? There's a video of that song. It's a concert video. It's concert footage of Velvet Revolver at the Live 8 concert in 2005, which I knew nothing about until after the fact. But Live 8. Certain kind of rock and roll history things were made at that Live 8 concert. Was that where Pink Floyd got back together with Roger Waters for a concert, I think? I think Led Zeppelin did something with John Paul Jones. You know, like the remaining members of Led Zeppelin got together and played a set. You know, it's a weekend, like 2-3 day festival sort of thing. And well, don't you know, Velvet Revolver played in it, and there's a video for the live version of the song Fall to Pieces that I'm talking about, and man, Scott Weiland is dressed up in some kind of weird, almost looks like a fucking bellboy outfit. It's like a maroon-colored captain hat thing, and he looked gay. He looks like... it's very gayish, and like I'm listening to Slash's guitar sound that irks me, and I'm looking at this gayish looking version of Scott Weiland up there. I can't make my way through the video. I'll just be honest with you, I can't do it, but it's out there. Drugs was the problem in my life until I stopped doing them. Drugs was the problem in Scott Weiland's life, and he never stopped doing them, and it killed him. And you know, drugs will, I guess, eventually, if you stick with them long enough, they'll drive you gayish apparently, and you know, then you go a little bit more than that and they will eventually kill you. So on that note, adios.
thank you for tuning into Post-Stalin Monologics. Please understand that this project is meant to be part of a long-term archive as a series of snapshots reflecting a distant past. We are not seeking advertisers, but may at times accept private anonymous donations to help mitigate production costs. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Stalin Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at poststalin.com and at onsert.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@poststalin.com.